Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Milford, chair of the club's grown-ups forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Rick Deutsch. Rick is retired from a 30-year Silicon Valley computer marketing career. He's an avid scuba diver, bicyclist, and hiker. His adventures range from dog sledding in Alaska to rafting the Grand Canyon three times in the same day, to hiking Peru's Inca Trail. He's written the only guidebook to Yosemite's Half Dome and has done this strenuous hike an amazing 35 times. Often called Mr. Half Dome, he strives to help hikers do this popular but harrowing hike safely. Rick is a member of the National Speakers Association and gives over 40 presentations a year at museums, colleges, associations, and companies. He is in demand as a guest lecturer on cruise ships and travels extensively. Half Dome is his passion, and he encourages others to find theirs. Welcome, Rick Deutsch.
Well, thank you, John, and I'm happy to be here. The grown-up section, I'm age-appropriate. But I tell my wife, I got the body of a 30-year-old. She tells me, you got the mind of a 12-year-old. So I hope you're going to have fun here today. Let's keep it lively. It's not a heavy subject, but I hope to share some information with you. As you see, I call the talk Someday Never Comes, and in less than an hour, I hope you realize that. Conquer life's challenges with a spirit of adventure. But I think basically what a better title would be a shot of adrenaline for your life. So I'm hoping to do that here tonight. Okay, here's the sun. Is the sun rising or setting? Well, we don't know, do we? We'll talk about that later. But I'm going to share a little bit about my background, and in particular, turn that sun into this sun. That's the logo for Sun Microsystems. Sun Microsystems was a rather large company down in the South Bay. And what we did is we made large servers that drove the Internet, telephone companies, plus the Internet as well, small startup companies. We also produced workstations, starting with engineering workstations. Basically, we owned the market. Look at some of these numbers. The company was founded in 1982, and by 1988, we had sales of $1 billion, and that was pretty darn fast. We hit a high of revenue of $13 billion. We invented this term. We were the dot in .com. Pretty clever. Well, we were one of the high flyers, of course. We also came up with the tagline, the network is the computer. Pretty cool. Well, if you recall what happened, the Internet bubble burst. And that was about 99, 2000. I'm sure many of you, you know, realize that were part of that. So what happened? Yes, August of 2006, a nice warm day. Rick, you're not needed anymore. 4,000 of us at one big whack were dismissed as the company was trying to bail out what they were doing. How does that feel to be deleted in your position after 20 years at the same company? So what do? Well, the first thing you do is you get in line with everybody else. Unemployment. Oh, my gosh, what a cut to your ego. Then I read a book called Do What You Love, The Money Will Follow. And I highly recommend this to you by Marcia Sinotar. And we don't have any children, and you know, we weren't too bad off. So I told my wife, I'm not going to go back to the corporation and work for the man. I'm going to try to do it myself. And what is it that I really love doing? It's, as John said, hiking, biking, scuba, all those kind of things. And I said, you know, I'm going to give a go of it and see if I can generate some income as an entrepreneur. Well, I developed a passion for that rock you see before you, Half Dome. I first did the hike in 1990. And in 1990, it wasn't the crowds that occur recently. We would leave at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning and basically see nobody on a Saturday. Well, that's all changed. Got very crowded, and I'll tell you about that a little bit later. But I enjoyed that hike so much. And I said, you know, I should have done this sooner. It's a massive hike, but when you get to the top and check the scenery out, it's quite something. So I said, you know, I'm going to do it every year. And I have. And many years I've done it up to four times in a summer. Now, I'm not obsessed because that's a negative word. I say it's my passion. And I hope all of you have a passion as well. In fact, I got so good at it, I wrote the only book to doing it. That amazed me because I didn't want to write a book. I kept asking, where's the book? I'd like to learn more. Well, trail guide books for Yosemite are very good, and there's dozens of trails you can go on, but you'll only find 2 to 3 pages on Half Dome. I said, come on, I need to know more. Will somebody write a book? So I think by my 15th time or so, I said, geez, I got enough pictures, and I know enough about it. So I self-published a book, which if you've ever done that, that's quite an interesting thing. It cost a couple $1,000s for the company to put it all together, but I didn't care. I just wanted to have the book out. So soon after that, I went to, as you see at the bottom there, Wilderness Press, very large outdoor book company. They do rock climbing and kayaking. And I presented my self-published book. And they said, this is perfect. We want a book on Half Dome. So we redid it, my self-published book. What you see there is my second edition now. It's been very successful. We sell it in the park, at Outfitters, just about anywhere that they'll take it. And we've sold over 10,000 copies. And people ask me, why did you write a book about one trail? Because people want to do it. And they have no guidance right now on how to do it. So I tell people in that book what the history of the valley was, what the history of Half Dome was, the geology, the stories about the Indians, but then in detail how to actually do the hike with equipment and water treatment, things like that. So what I'm going to do now is going to have a little film clip and show you, for those that aren't familiar with Yosemite or Half Dome, a little bit what I'm talking about and why it's an extremely strenuous hike. So let's go ahead and roll that. Now this is Half Dome itself, and I'm just panning around. The top of Half Dome is 8,800 feet from sea level, and look to the right there. It goes down rather sharply on either side. So I call the right side we're looking at there infinity. As we come back up, you can see that line in the middle. That is the cable route that we use to get to the top. And looking down to the left side, rather sharp, curved down. You don't want to fall off that side either. I call that oblivion. So you get, as you can see, you get a great view of the valley and the mountains on the other side there. And here's the actual cables right there. The cables don't take you to the ultimate top, but as you can see, you're pretty well done when you get there. The cables themselves are at a 45-degree angle, and therefore the little right triangle trigonometry, it runs about 600 feet that you're going up at a 45-degree angle. So it's tough. It's pretty tough. Okay, so after all these trips, I decided, there's certain things that I'm learning from this, and maybe I can motivate people, not just how to do the hike, which I do a lot of, but I came up with this acronym, DOME, D-O-M-E. So let's take a look. It's a metaphor for life. First, the D is discovery, so discovering your passion, whatever your passion is. The O is obstacles. Recognize you're going to have to run into obstacles in your life. Hey, I run into obstacles going up Half Dome. It's pretty darn hike, pretty hard hike. The M is for motivation. I've got to be motivated to get up and do Half Dome. And lastly, the E is enthusiasm. If you're enthusiastic in life, you're going to go pretty far. So let's break that down first on discovery. So I'm going to have little stories to kind of highlight this. So I discovered Half Dome in 1990 and was just knocked out. And because of that, after I did that hike, I said, time's passing too fast. I've got to write down all these things I want to get done. And that started a bucket list, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I said, this is so great, why didn't I do it sooner? But what it did, it spurred me on to doing other things. So as you heard in the introduction, I've done some pretty neat things. It's great. And luckily, I took pictures. Of course, that was in the 35-millimeter days, so I got slides at home, about 50 carousels. So giving a talk off of 35-millimeter, this doesn't happen anymore. In fact, a funny anecdote, one of my first talks, my first talk at Yosemite, really great place, good audience and all that. And I called the woman organizing it, and I said, I got my laptop and I need a projector. So yeah, no problem, we got all that. Well, I've learned giving talks, you got to be self-sufficient. So I've got my own projector, a screen, 50-foot extension cord. I am self-sufficient. So she said, yes, we got a projector, no problem. Okay, great. So I left mine at home. I went up there in an audience about this size, and she said, here's the projector, 35-millimeter projector. So I did it anyway, but I had to hold my laptop up to the left side and the right side, and we got through it. But I learned on that. So that's Half Dome. Let me just ask, how many people have never been to Yosemite or seen Half Dome? Okay, just a few. You can do it in a day from San Francisco. You leave early in the morning, figure 4 to 5 hours to get there. You can see the waterfalls and the big rock formations. Leave at 5 o'clock at night, be back home, 10 o'clock. So think about doing that. But I know you're not unusual. I have friends back in San Jose that are my age and never been there. Wow, you're kidding me. This place is probably the best in the world. It really is for those that have been there. It's quite eye-dropping. Okay, Josiah Whitney. You might recognize the name from Mount Whitney. It was named after him. He was the California geologist back in the early days. And Yosemite has been around since 1851 under the whites, you know, influence. But in 1869, the geology groups were, you know, mapping all the mountains and getting measurements and all that. So they went to all the mountains, and they came to Yosemite, and here's what he said in a book. Half Dome is perfectly inaccessible, being probably the only one of all the prominent points about Yosemite which has never been and never will be trodden by human foot. Okay, that was 1869. And believe me, people tried. There were mountaineers back then that tried. They just couldn't do it. It was too steep. Now, I'm not talking about the face. I don't climb. I don't go up the face. But obviously, going the backside is the way we go up, which is, of course, a little bit easier. But it's very hard. You can't do it without support. Okay, it's just too steep. So people back in the era tried it. They'd get about a fourth of the way up and just couldn't go any further. However, in 1875, October 12th, this man made it to the top. His name is George Anderson. And Anderson was a Scottish sailor, an immigrant to the U.S. He worked in the valley as a blacksmith, a handyman, and he built many of the trails that we go on today. George Anderson, he's kind of my hero. Well, if you take a look at the picture, this is how a representation of how he went up. He forged steel spikes with an eyelet about 6 inches long and put about 40 to 50 in his bag. Again, CNN wasn't there at the time, and so a lot of this information is kind of fuzzy. It was like a letter to Aunt Gertrude when some of this stuff came out. So, you know, but we think this is the best we know. So he put these spikes in his bag, and then he would drill a hole with a steel rod with a sledgehammer in about 4 inches. Then he would take a little hunk of wood and shove it in the hole, then push one of his steel spikes in. And as you see, he went barefoot, stepping on his spikes, and they would go up higher until he needed another one. And he basically went the whole way. Now, why did he use bare feet? Well, he found that his boots were just too awkward. He even dipped his boots in pine tar, making them a little stickier, but he found they were too sticky. He couldn't remove his feet as he was going up. So he settled out just going barefoot, which is something else. So he made it all the way to the top with a rope. He ran a rope up, then he came back down and took about a 700-foot rope with him, ran it through those eyelets that you can kind of see there by his left foot, and secured it there. And that was the first time anybody was able to get up Half Dome, which was just quite an amazing thing. The first group that he took up was a group of 5 British gentlemen that were in town. Now, George Anderson did this for a couple reasons. Of course, getting to the top is cool. But in that era, it was kind of the Wild West around Yosemite. If you built a trail, you could charge a toll for people to go on it. And he had this idea. He said, if I get to the top of Half Dome, I can charge tolls. He even had an idea to put a staircase up the side of Half Dome so people could walk up a wood-board and staircase. And it was said he actually started collecting wood and starting to do it. So the other thing that's kind of interesting is John Muir was the 9th person up. Okay, and he wrote in his books about his views and how nice it was with the clouds. And John Muir is quite the writer. For the women here, Sally Dutcher was the 8th person to go up. So there you go. And, of course, we didn't have Gore-Tex and North Face then, and they went up in those dresses and high boots. Quite amazing. And today, you know, we've got to have all this outdoor gear. So remember George Anderson. He's my hero. In 1919, the Sierra Club funded these cables to go up the backside of Half Dome. And as you see, what we have are steel pipes that are about 3 feet high, and they're spaced about 10 feet apart. You can see the wood board slats, and what the Park Service does, they learned really quick. Remember, they went up in 1919, and in 1921, an avalanche ripped out one of the cables. So they said, that's probably not a good idea. So they take the pipes and those boards down and just lay the cable flat. So the cable is actually made up of 3 parts. You can see on the left side of the screen, part of the cable goes and is anchored, and it's continued with another cable. And now you're not going to take the cables that are over 600 feet long. We'll take questions at the end. You're not going to be able to take that now, so they just lay on the side. Now, what you're looking at is when the cables are up for summer use. Generally, that's the end of May till early October. And that's what we generally call the hiking season at Half Dome. Now, the pipes themselves are just sitting in about 4-inch deep holes. And believe me, they will come out. I've done it once. I'll never do it again. It really scares you. So if you do the hike, if you're interested in that, pull down on the cable, not up on the pipe. Also, you look at the 2x4 boards. They're really loosely strapped there. I mean, they bounce around. The cable's kind of loose in spots. It's really a neat trip. Okay. Now, here's a good shot of people actually going up the cables. Now, it got very, very popular, and it's not because I wrote a book, darn it. People say, yeah, look at that. At one point in 2009, on Saturdays during the summer, 1,200 people went up Half Dome. Okay, that's not a good experience. So what the park did recently is they started a permit system, and what they said is, you know, weather changes rather rapidly in the mountains, and you have to give people a chance to come down. When there's too many people up there, people freeze and you just can't come down. So what they plan for is a 24-minute descent. Therefore, this year starting, we've had permits for 3 years, 225 day hikers can go up, and 75 people with wilderness backpacking permits can go up. That ain't many at all. It's very hard to get a permit. It's a lottery. If you get a permit, though, it's a great hike. You don't see anybody. It's really sparse about what you see there. This kind of shows you it's about 45 degrees, and it's not a trick photo there. It's really tough. There's the final objective. Getting to the top, they call that the visor. It sticks out about 80 feet from the rest of the rock, as you see down below. And this is the picture you want for your office. Get you up there on the tippy top, and it's a lot of fun. Okay, so after doing this hike and getting all excited, you may remember the movie 2007, The Bucket List. Well, I started this after my Half Dome hike in 1990. I didn't call it a bucket list. You know, I called it a life list. And what I'm going to show you now is my life list. I carried that thing for 20 years when I worked. I kept it in a binder. I spilled peanut butter and ketchup on it, too, as you see there. But on the left side, now this is kind of old, but I put down my age. I started at about 40, and I didn't know how long I was going to be ambulatory, and my paper ran out, so this kind of took it to 67. But then on the right side, I listed everything that I personally wanted to do. Now, it's my list. You can have your own list. But my list was to go see things like, of course, Mount Whitney, Machu Picchu. You can kind of see that some of the things in there. And it's a living list. I never heard of Ephesus or Petra till about 8 years ago. Really, I never had. And now I've been there. So anyway, that's the life list. Now, what I'd like you to do, you're probably sitting on a piece of paper. Go ahead and pull that out because I'm going to help you. Does anybody have a life list now or a bucket list? Is it written down? Good. Because a lot of people go, it's on my list, and point to their head. You ain't ever going to do it. So if you open up your little sheet there, I've actually helped you. I got you started. Okay, there's no excuse. Okay, you can do up to 25 things. I don't care how old you are. You can just start filling those things in. It doesn't have to be places you want to go. Hey, I got the Indy 500, you know, those kind of things. That's me. So whatever you want to do, if it's working with children in Ethiopia, it doesn't matter. You know, so you got to have a passion for something. And so a passion is basically something you would do if you didn't get paid. Now, I'm retired. I don't get paid. But I love this hike. So that's mine. So pick out yours, you know, and develop a passion for it. So there you go. So please take that home and, you know, fill in. You know, I'm not going to check it. But I think it helps to say, write the thing down and look at it. Because unless you say, I'm going to book that trip to the Grand Canyon next June. I'm going to do it. You know, Tom, you want to go? Bill, you want to go? We're going. You won't go. 5 years later, you know, I still want to raft the Grand Canyon. 10 years goes by. So that's why I believe someday never comes. So someday I want to see the pyramids. It doesn't happen that way. So carpe diem is my motto, which means seize the day. In other words, that someday never comes. Let's go to the O in obstacles. Okay, getting up Half Dome, believe me, is a big obstacle. Not falling is a very big obstacle. So just working with Half Dome, I got those obstacles. But I got another story for you. Let's talk about Heavenly Valley. And I'm sure many of you have skied there. Nice, beautiful place. So this picture is taken from the top area. Well, it was in late December, 1997. I went up with my brother and sister. And you can imagine around Christmas time, it was rather crowded. So I said, let's go over to the Nevada side, which is usually sparse. Well, it was very crowded, too. And another skier was coming right at me, and I did a hard 180-degree turn to get out of his way. I crossed my skis, and I went down. Well, the first thing after I woke up, blood was pouring out of my nose, and my brother came up, took his T-shirt off, and held it on. Well, I was wearing, you know, contact lenses at the time, and that's my mask, my goggles. Believe me, you read the box, they're for wind and snow protection only. They don't, and I all this time thought, I always wear my goggles, that'll protect me. It didn't. As you see the cracks right there, whatever I landed on, it was probably the binding, really did a number on me. So they took me to Barton Hospital in Tahoe, took CAT scans, and the doctor came out and says, I'm not an eye doctor, but I don't think you'll have use of your eye anymore. Oh, great. Nothing else hurt. Even the eye didn't hurt. But about 3 hours later, they put me on a medevac airplane back to San Jose, Kaiser. And I had about four doctors all over me because this is a pretty unusual injury. They said usually an eye injury, it's fights, but your eye socket stops the penetration. So the next slide, if you don't want to look at this, look away. But it's me in the hospital. Yeah, ooh. And that's it. Boy, that was something. And so what I suffered from that was called acute traumatic glaucoma. So when you get a bop on that, so my pupil slams wide open, so my pupil's not dilated. We were talking earlier, so I wear a medic alert bracelet, and it says left eye pupil dilated. Because if you bonk and the medics come and see your eyes, they're going to think you got shock, you know, right? So I carry this. And actually, this is a good idea, even if you don't have an injury. You know, everybody, oh, you got a blood disease or diabetes. No. A lot of outdoors people now have these. What this is a toll-free number, no matter where you are in the world, and your medical records actually are in Turlock. And so, you know, even if you don't have a problem, how many times do you go out without your wallet, with your ID? A lot. You know, if you go jogging around the block, who knows if you're not going to bonk. And who is this? We don't know who it is. So that's a little suggestion. Anyway, I also had a blowout fracture of my eye socket. Your eye socket is paper thin, like an eggshell. And when you put a lot of pressure on it, it just basically explodes. So the next picture, I bought a little skull. And that shows you in black what I don't have. Okay, so this is something else. For the first 2 days after the accident, I was blind. I couldn't see anything. What really excited me was the nurse came in the third day, and I could see flowers, red flowers on her outfit. I can see. So I spent a couple weeks trying to get that eye pressure down. When you go to your optometrist and they do the puff test on your eye, it should be 14, 15, 16, something like that. Mine hit 42. And the doctor says, if it gets near 60, there's nothing we can do. You know, it's just your retina's going to implode. So I had an operation called a trabeculectomy, which usually elderly people get. What they do is they actually put a hole at the top of your eyeball and create a blister, and that allows the waste products to get out of your eye. I learned quite a bit. I went to Stanford bookstore, medical school, and bought all this kind of stuff. But your waste fluids actually go out through your iris, and there's a meshwork in there, and mine was clogged. And so this pressure kept building and building in the aqueous part of the front part of the eye. And so I had to take all these medicines, but finally had that operation. About 3 weeks after that, I had plastic surgery to put a titanium plate with three screws right underneath my eye to keep my eye up because it was kind of sinking back. Is that an obstacle? Yeah. But I didn't roll over and say, well, gosh, I can't do anything. I got back scuba, hiking, just everything I do. It's just now I don't have any peripheral vision to the left. But, you know, I don't speed in cars anymore, zipping in and out. I really look both ways. So, you know, you have obstacles too. You know, maybe nothing as dramatic as this. Maybe one of those is time management, okay? So if you're taking notes, here's some things you might want to walk away with. I suggest you cancel your magazine subscriptions. I mean, I used to get like six magazines, you know, hiking, scuba, and all these other magazines. But turns out your library probably has most of those magazines you subscribe to, you know? And don't waste your time reading these magazines. Go to the library and knock them all out. What I like to do is put reading material in my car. So how many times do you go to a restaurant to sit down by yourself rather than just gawking and looking at other people? Read the magazine at that time. Another thing is don't reread your pages. I know when I pick a magazine up, I'll go like six pages in, put it down, 2 weeks later, oh, yeah, let me finish this. And I start all over again, page one, flip through. So don't reread your pages. Just move on and say, I've read it, and I ain't going back again. Handle each piece of paper once. If you're working now, I've learned this as well. When you get a piece of paper, do something with it. Just, you know, file it, act on it, whatever. Don't put it in a stack because you're going to go back to it and you're going to reread it again, spend more time. So handle each piece of paper once. Make a decision then. All right, I'd suggest that you, for television, it's a vast wasteland. Remember that phrase? Newton Minow, head of the FCC, called television a vast wasteland. I agree with him. Now, I have one show that I watch, Survivor. I've seen every episode. Yes, I'm sorry. It's corny, but I actually applied for Survivor number 10 when they went to China, me and 30,000 other people. So I didn't get to go. But think about how much time you waste on television. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Okay. Delegate things at work, It's called monkey management. So if you're assigned something, you got a monkey on your back. God, I got to get this done. Is there somebody else you can give the monkey to and pass it on? And I'm not saying dodge work, but, you know, use your resources. Next one is prioritize your tasks. Instead of having, you know, most of us have to-do lists, and you kind of go, oh, I'll do this one today, I'll do that one today. Try this. Prioritize them. Make it an A or a B or a C. A, you say you've got to get those done. That's important. The next, B's are kind of, you should do them. C's are like, well, I'd like to get them done, but, you know, it's not that important. And actually, they've shown that if you have like 10 minutes time, it's more efficient to spend that on an A than to go to a C and knock it off. Yeah, I did another one there. Because you're never going to get to the A's. You called them an A, so try that method. Carry a recorder. How many times do you get an idea? And you get home. Oh, man, you know, this Alzheimer's thing. I forgot what, you know. If you don't carry a recorder, and most cell phones now have a recording capability, you're in your car, write it, you know, say something. You know, get it there and get home. Keep a notepad on your nightstand. How many times you lay in bed, ooh, yeah, we got to do this. Ooh, you wake up in the morning, forgot. So write it down if you can. In the morning, it might just look like scribble, but that's another thing that may help you with your time. The next thing is get the negative people out of your life. How many people do you know, as a couple, that are just a drain on you? And also remember, you may be the negative people in other people's lives. And I witnessed that firsthand. I always plan events. Tom, let's go bike riding. You know, Joe, let's do this. I never get a call from Tom or Joe. Why am I always the organizer? And that guy is just a drain on me. You know, maybe he's very critical of me. You don't need that. So get these negative people away from you. Okay. How about money management? That's one for all of us, right? Well, here's some tips. Pay yourself first. I'm sure you've all heard that. If you get a paycheck, put 10% in your bank. Don't even look at what's coming. Pay yourself first. How much do you guys spend at Starbucks? Luckily, I don't like coffee, so I don't have to do that. But my wife does. And I think the lattes, grande, super duper vente is $4.50. Do you need one of those every day? I mean, add it up. You do the math. You know, every weekday or whatever, 52 weeks times $4.50, not bad. How about newspapers? Most newspapers now you can get online, so you don't need to pay that $40 every 2 months or whatever to the newspaper. Unless, I love newspapers. That's what we do in the morning. You know, I got to have the page turning and see all the ads, and we'll look at the news story in the top 2 inches. But think about newspapers if you don't really need them. How about online shopping? Okay, now what's happened is we're all going to brick-and-mortar stores and seeing the product and then buying it online. Well, you know, so think about that. You heard great bargains, cameras, and, you know, I'm sorry, but it's part of our society. And selling also, you know, the auction houses, eBay and Craigslist. I'm going through at my house a lot of junk, but people will buy it. It's quite amazing. You can pick up some money that way. It's kind of neat. How about restaurants? How much do you eat out at night? Well, my wife loves to eat out. I'm not going to cook tonight. We go out too much. She has a wine with it. We're pushing $50. Said, you know, come on, dear. We can eat tuna. So just think about your restaurants and kind of watch that. Obvious, take public transit when you can. I took BART up from Fremont. And because I kind of compared, parking is $30 up here. And you got to find a place and the traffic. So I took BART. Do a want versus need analysis. What do you want in life? Oh, I want a new cell phone. I want an iPad. I want. Versus, what do you need? What do you really need? And how much of these devices are sitting collecting dust in your top drawer? So when you need something, you know, that's certainly something you should spend money on. Think about bulk purchases. You know, the old Price Club, Sam's Club, Costco. Man, one of the things you're going to need, I know you're going to need it for the rest of your life, is toilet paper. It's way better to buy the bulk toilet paper instead of, you know, the little packages each time. Now, my wife almost won't let me go into Costco. I'm a $200 kind of guy. But anyway, for purchases like that, think about that. If we're here to save money, use regular in your car, not premium. And I don't care what your owner's manual says. If your car does not knock or ping, you don't need premium. Try it. We have a Lexus, and my wife totally agrees. We use regular. Is it worth paying 15 to 20 cents more for premium? It's not good for your engine. I'm going to do a favor for my engine. I'm going to put premium in tonight. I'm sorry. They've shown many times, the oil companies won't tell you this. It's all marketing. Think about using regular. And lastly, in life, if you don't ask, you don't get. If you're working and you want a raise, well, when am I going to get a raise? Go in and ask for it. You'll be surprised. And that's another one of my mottos is, you know, I'm not shy. I'm pretty confident in what I do, and I'm going to ask for things. You know, I want a discount. You know, I want my fee. This is my fee or whatever. So think about that. Okay, let's move on here to the M. M is motivation. Again, to get up Half Dome, I got to be motivated to train, and I train a lot. I train down in Fremont at Mission Peak, and that's a pretty hard one. Before I go to Half Dome, I do it twice in the same day. It's 6 hours for me to do it. Then I feel, okay, I'm ready. So I got to be motivated to get up at 5 a.m. up at Yosemite and be on the trail at 5:30 and get on with it. So I got motivation to take care of. Now, what I'd like to show you next is my basketball career. That was something that I was highly motivated for as a young kid. And I got a prop. Who wants to catch it? Okay. I was in love with basketball. That's a picture taken, I think I was about in sixth grade. But I, from second grade on, I played basketball. I wanted to play basketball. Well, as time goes on, I was very short at the time, believe it or not. Okay, that's me as a freshman in high school. Still got the basketball. And I would go to basketball camps, you know, 2 weeks at the college, whatever it was. And literally, I played in the playgrounds quite a bit. At night, we had lights. I grew up in Virginia. And I would get a basketball in the spring, May, and it would be bald by September just from playing so much because I really, that was my motivation. I wanted to be better. Okay, as I got a little bit older, you can kind of see, and I was actually able to palm the ball. I don't know if I can do it anymore. But again, on the freshman team in my high school, I was 5'4". I was the second shortest kid on the team. And I was, you know, other kids came in from six other schools. Man, these guys are shaving already, you know? And they had one-hand jump shots. I had a two-hand overhead kind of a jump shot. It worked. But as a result, I sat on the bench quite a bit. By my senior year, I was the sixth man. And I obviously grew quite a bit. I was 5'11 my senior year. I'm now about 6'2". And I actually had a jump shot. But because of the legacy I had, I was the sixth man. But my dad kept track. I went in for Jim Neal all the time. And I know the guy, he's still around. And I played more quarters than Jimmy Neal did. Yay, Dad. So, okay, so this is a fun story here for me. My senior year, we were playing in the Virginia State Catholic Tournament for third place. And the other team was Norfolk Catholic. And they had the highest scoring player in the state. He scored, I think it was 25 points a game, named Bill Bowen. At halftime, we were losing. And the coach comes up to me, Rick, you're going to start second half, and I want you to cover Bowen. Okay. Wow. Cool. I held him to 8 points in the second half. I scored 8 points of my own in the second half, and we tied, went into overtime. I scored eight more in overtime, and we won. Where was this, you know, last game of the year? I'm done. So as a school year went on, I had my coach send a letter to University of Maryland, where I went to college, and I was invited to their summer workouts. So they had five scholarship players and a couple of us walk-ons, but I didn't have to try out with the rest of the school, 33,000 students at Maryland. And they had open tryouts in September. 500 boys showed up. Well, after one night, they cut it to 50. And of those 50, they picked up three. And I didn't have to do that. So I made the team. What a dream came true. And I was, I think, about eighth man on when I was a freshman. So there you go. That's Ricky with his goofy glasses. And that's something. I was very proud of that. And motivation got me there. So in your life, you know, you got to be motivated as well. So think about your motivation. How do you get motivated? These are some motivators that I've thought about. Emulate successful people. Read success stories. Attend motivational seminars. There's a lot of them. A lot of them out there that you can get cranked up on or buy the DVDs and the videotapes. And don't look back in your life, well, I shoulda, coulda, woulda. Don't do that. You know, on the other hand, learn from the past. You know, don't repeat the mistakes. Counsel others. Try to help other people out, and you'll be motivated when you're doing that. Stay healthy. You know, you gotta exercise. The doctors say 3 to 5 days a week for 30 minutes. How many do that? You know, when I do Half Dome, I've got to train and I got to get up there and, you know, get to the gym and run and bike and do all those things. So stay healthy and be spiritual. If you believe in the deity, you know, go for it. You know, whatever gets you going, if it's the church of the birds and the trees or an organized religion, you know, that certainly helps. And love yourself. I mean, that sounds corny, but if you don't like yourself, why would anybody else like you? You know, so be confident, be motivated, and basically play the cards you're dealt. Getting an eye socket blown out, what are you going to do? You play the cards you're dealt. Okay. So, I'm actually, it's tough for me to play basketball now because I can't see the guys on the left side. It's kind of like dark over there. So as far as motivation, sitting on the bench for all that time and finally making the team, let me tell you, there's one thing when you sit on the bench that you get good at. Take a look at this. Okay. Thank you. So the guys that play first string don't have time to practice that. Okay, let's move on then to enthusiasm. I have to be very enthusiastic to be able to get up there. That's me peering over the edge, looking for climbers going up the face. It takes climbers about 3 to 4 days. They spend the night in little hammocks on the side. I don't do that. I hike. But that's me looking over the edge, and some days you can see helmets, you know, on the men and women coming up the top. Look at the view that we're getting up there. That's the Yosemite Valley, 7 miles long, carved out by glaciers. I'm sure the top right, that's probably where most of you stay, at the Iwani Hotel. It's only $460 a night. But so now here's a story that I'm going to share with you. We have scuba divers. Okay, do you want to see sharks? No. Yes. Well, most scuba divers want to. I've got 250 dives. I've been a lot of places. In this picture, I have an underwater camera, does stills and video. It's a big honking thing. This is in Papua New Guinea, which is north of Australia. Went there for a 16-day liveaboard trip, and these Australian skippers are, you know, pretty different. So we went on a shark dive, okay? And that's a white-tip reef shark I took with my still. And what I'm going to show you now is a video that I took. And let me give you the setting before I turn it on. We're in the middle of nowhere, but the dive master, the owner of the boat, says we're going to do a shark dive. And what they do is they get fish heads, wire them all together, and then go down and wire the other end to a reef or a rock so it stays there. And then what they did is they told us all to get in the water and back up against a kind of a reef about 40 feet deep. Then there was a depression in front of us, and then the area where the chumsicle was, they call it, was on the other side. Okay, that's cool. You know, we're protected, and after a while, sharks start swimming overhead and all that. And then I'm filming this. This is really cool. So what's going to happen that you're going to see here is a shark feed. Have you heard of a frenzy? Okay, you're going to see this. This is really cool. So right in the middle there, you know, look how mellow this is. Everybody's just swimming around leisurely. Okay, that's cool. And I'm just having a great time. Man, this is really neat. And let me see if the audio picks up. You hear that? So you hear my bubbles breathing, and you're going to hear some other sounds coming up here. So I'm having a great time. I zoom in a little bit. You can see the fish heads just kind of hanging there. And now that the sharks get excited, they start coming in. Now, one thing I don't understand is why don't they eat the little fish that are swimming around there? I don't get it, unless the fish heads are more tasty. So they're really getting into it, aren't they? And we're sitting maybe 20 feet away. I mean, it's rare to see the underbelly of a shark, but they're like mad dogs going at it. So there's gray sharks and white-tip reef sharks. They're not known to be man-eaters, like the great white and the hammerhead and the bull shark, tiger shark. There's only about 5 species of sharks that attack people. Of course, you don't want to invite them to. So look at the size of these guys come by. They're about 6 to 7 feet long. Okay, now you probably can't hear it, but the skipper comes over and grabs me by my left arm and walks me over to where the sharks are. I'm going, what the? And he's trying to talk to me. Blah, 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 blah. You can't understand it. Okay, so we get over there. I didn't even have time to go wide angle. I was still on zoom going, holy cow. If something happens, I own his boat, right? So look how close we are here. We're right on top of him now. I mean, that's a little freaky. But most divers want to experience this. It's quite a rush. I mean, look at him here. Look at this guy. Just tearing at it like a dog after a little rat or something. Now, I'm trying to keep my breathing regular while this is going on. Okay, now they're really getting into it. So that noise is the teeth on the cable. Okay, now here comes the good part. Watch this. Right at me, okay? I'm sitting there, and that you saw the shark go after the fish, and I just went boom like that. And, of course, the film goes white, and then if you hear it better, it just kind of does that. And then everything mellows out. So, and it just, everything's, okay. So I get to the surface. I said, what was that all about? He says, well, Rick, you know, after seeing you here for several days, I know you'd like to do that. You were so enthusiastic about diving. I said, yeah, but what were you trying to say to me? He said, I was saying, you can't talk for your regulator. He says, it's okay. It's all right. Don't worry. Like, That's all I hear. So anyway, that is enthusiasm. So, you know, you think I was a little excited? Okay. So let's review now. DOME. I think it's a pretty good acronym. Discover your passion. Do your bucket list. Find out what you get going for. Know you're going to have obstacles in life. They may be a lot different than mine, but everybody has them. And overcome them the best you can. Get counseling, you know, whatever. Be motivated. You know, if everybody wants a happy person that's motivated, motivation is very contagious. And enthusiastic. I think if you're enthusiastic and, you know, really into something and happy, you'll be able to come through. So let's go back to the sunset here. Now, the question is it a sunrise or a sunset? What do you think? Sunrise, hands. Okay, sunset, hands. Okay, well, take a look. Here's what I say. It's a sunrise, because I can't wait for every day to come. Do it now, because someday never comes. So carpe diem, seize the day. And what we're going to do next is have some questions.
Okay.
Okay?
We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California. You're listening to Rick Deutsch with Someday Never Comes. I know we have questions, Rick. Those who have questions, raise your hand and we'll get them on the mic.
We can do hiking questions, half-dome questions, Yosemite questions, my favorite color questions.
Were you protected in some way from the sharks?
No, ma'am. We just had our scuba outfits on, okay. You know, our tanks and the regulators and our mask, and no.
And I was only in Yosemite once, end of May, and it snowed the second day, and the regular shuttle wasn't going, so I didn't see much. What are the best months? And I was told, even by a Gray Line tour driver, that one day is not enough. You have only maybe 2.5 hours in the park, and then you're back on the bus. Isn't it necessary to stay one night?
To answer like this woman here, one day is better than no days. Okay, and yeah, it's crowded. 4 million people come to Yosemite, but why should you stay home and they get to go? Okay, as far as the best time to go,
the warm weather.
Well, you want the best time to go? It's in June. The sun, June 21st, you get the longest days, and the waterfalls are flowing. It's all snow melt. There's about 21 big waterfalls over 300 feet.
Well,
it's all snow melt. Okay, so they peter out by mid-July into August, so don't invite your relatives to see Yosemite in September. There won't be any waterfalls. They're literally dry.
And what's a place to stay in?
Well, there's several hotel kind of accommodations. The Ahwahnee Hotel is, you know, if you can, you know, do that. It's $460 a night. Then there's Yosemite Lodge. It's more of a 70s vintage hotel. Then you can go in a tent cabin. You can go camping if you'd like, or stay outside the park. There's many hotel complexes outside. Yeah.
My goodness, I bet your mind was just on fire when you were sitting on the sidelines, when you were always sitting on the bench just thinking about what you would do if you could just get out there. I mean, what was going through your mind?
It was very frustrating because I did spend a lot of, you know, Fridays and Saturday nights at the local playground, pick up games. And you always play with people that are older than you, so you get better. And I thought it was pretty good. It was very accurate, and I would just practice a lot. You know, dribble, 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 shoot, shoot. In fact, my dad and I would go to our Catholic church where we went. About 2 in the afternoon, he'd get the key to the gym from the Monsignor. And then me and him would go. He'd unlock it, and we'd practice in there. He'd set chairs up and, you know, make me dribble around him. He caught my shots. And kids would be banging on the doors. We didn't let anybody in. We did that quite a bit. So, yeah, it got a little frustrating. But I knew I was small, and I wasn't big enough to be, you know, a forward. And, as I got bigger, little guys who little me were better ball handlers. So, yeah.
Did your coach, like, give you some kind of constructive criticism
Boy, I've got constructive criticism all the time. Yeah. No, not really, because, see, I came in as a small person, 5'4", then 5'5", and he was coaching people that were, like I said, they were shaving. They had, you know, pretty far advanced maturity-wise, and I didn't hit that till I was like a junior. So he had his team, you know, we went from freshman team, junior varsity, and senior. So, but I was pretty good, and I made, you know, sixth man. He didn't want to start me. And the guy that I replaced had a one-hand jump shot while I was just, you know, thrown up. So, yeah. Yeah.
Two questions. First one is, last year I went to Yosemite and I did the hike that's on the way to Half Dome where there are two different waterfalls. I forget what they're called. But I'm curious, how far up of the hike is that?
It's Vernal Fall and then Nevada Fall. Vernal's 300 feet high, Nevada's 600 feet high. When you get to the top of Nevada Fall, the next thing is Little Yosemite Valley. You're halfway at Little Yosemite Valley. So getting to the top of Nevada Fall is hard. It's a good accomplishment, yeah.
And how about the other one? What percentage of the way is if you go up Vernal Falls?
No, if you take the Mist Trail, which is the Misty on Vernal and then Nevada, if you want to go the long way, that's the John Muir Trail. It's about a mile longer to go to the John Muir Trail.
Second question. Across the valley from Half Dome, you can drive up to the top there. And I'm curious, what's the comparison about the view down? Is it, because it looks like it's almost as high as Half Dome, but it's, so I'm curious.
You're talking about Glacier Point. And you can drive from the valley to the top. It's about 45 minutes. It's a must-see. Oh, my gosh. Because you're looking down at the valley. You're looking over at Half Dome. And Glacier Point's about 7,000 feet, and Half Dome is about 8,800. And that's you've got to do Glacier Point. It's not open yet now. So we're getting to the end of April, still snowbound. And the Tioga Road is the one that takes you over to Nevada. That's not plowed yet either.
Rick, what do you have in the future on your bucket list? What's coming up?
Okay. Now, I must say my wife knits, so I do a lot of adventures by myself or my brothers or friends. But I'm thinking of Antarctic and the Amazon. Those are two right up there that I want to get going to.
Rick, were you ever in your 35 climbs up to Half Dome, were you ever turned away by bad weather?
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point to bring up. Bad weather is a pox. When that rock is damp, like you saw in the cables, it's like motor oil, absolutely. You don't do it when there's any weather coming in or weather that has been. There's been a couple fatalities, and it's weather-related, absolutely. But it's in the wilderness. By being in the wilderness, you do what you want. You assess the risk, and then you deal with it. The rangers aren't going to stop you from going up. And that causes a problem because it's in the wilderness. You know, there's no signs. There's, you know, it's devoid of human impact, and you should have solitude. So, yes, certainly you get a ways up and you come back. August is bad for thunderstorms. When it's 110 in the valley and it meets that cold Pacific air, creates cumulonimbus clouds. And it'll usually rain about 1 or 2 o'clock, and you pretty well count on it in August. But then, you know, you can do the hike early in the morning and be down.
But in your case, are you ever turned away from going up?
They will not turn you away. No, they're there to check a permit and advise you. I would not go up today. It's kind of humorous, but they would say, what size body bag do you wear? Because somebody's got to deal with it if you fall. But no, they won't. Because if they ever say, okay, yeah, go, and something happens, imagine who gets $10 million from the Park Service, right? Yeah.
Rick, thanks for the great talk. Are there any, for those of us who are interested in hiking Half Dome, are there any hiking groups that we could look into joining to help us along the
way? Absolutely. Have you heard of meetups? Meetups, there's a lot of them meetups. There's a meetup for hiking Mission Peak. Yeah, so just go to meetup. You'll find groups, you know, that you can go with. Of course, there's formal organizations, Sierra Club, and there's other outdoor, you know, clubs that do that. But, yeah, you should have no trouble.
When you got laid off from Sun Microsystems, what are your tips going through the discovery? What kind of tools do you use to sort of go through that phase of what's next in that discovery?
Okay, that's a good question. I would have worked forever. I enjoyed it. I was in marketing, and I ended up doing international marketing. I got trips to Prague and Singapore. I mean, I was having a good time. I would have stayed forever. But I didn't have that choice. I wasn't given an option of, will you take a pay cut? I mean, I knew the product. I knew the salesman. I knew, you know, okay. So what do you do? What do you do? You look for another job? And, you know, the economy was terrible then. Good luck getting a job. So I said, you know, life's too short. I'm not going to work my fingers to a bone, you know, for the company. I mean, it was a good company. Sun was a very good company. For those that might know of them, Oracle bought the remnants of Sun about 4 years ago now. So it's part of Oracle. So Oracle's using the hardware that we produce and a lot of the software. In fact, Sun invented Java. Java runs on every cell phone. We just didn't monetize it very well.
I'm having
I'm having a hard time finding a job. So I am getting into something that I always loved to do. When I was a little girl, my grandmother used to praise me for cleaning up the house because she didn't want to clean up. She would say, oh, you're just a good house cleaner. So I'm going into the house cleaning business, and I see that, okay, you work for Sun Microsystems, and you did marketing and international marketing for them. And I find that, okay, it's good to help a business stay healthy and grow and, you know, do whatever you can to help that business grow and succeed. And then, you know, I think about, well, you know, it's something I want to do as well. I want to get into my own business, and I have a passion and stuff like that. Well, was all that going through your mind about, you know, I have got fired, I got to find another job, I couldn't find one, and all that time you were looking, you could have been...
Okay, no, in my particular case, everybody's different. Yes. But in my case, I did a lot of other things. I had the book going. I lectured on cruise ships. I teach Nordic walking, which is walking with poles for fitness.
You did what on cruise ships?
I lecture, I give speeches, talks on places, you know, Galapagos, the Great Wall of China, those kind of things. And I was pretty confident, so I wanted to start my own little thing. I'm an LLC, Carpe Diem Experience. I have a business license in San Jose, and I have a reseller's license. And I just wanted to do all that to build something. And what I'd recommend to you is think about starting a website. And if you have a website, you've got a blog. Blog on your subject and write quality content. Do quantity. Do it a lot, you know, a couple times a day if you can do it. Be perseverant about it. In time, you will build up a readership that are doing keywords on house cleaning or whatever, you know, is your thing. And the idea is the more hits that you get a bigger audience, you come up in the search engines, and then you can start advertising on your site. So I do that. I've got a couple websites, one for my speaking and one for my hiking, and I sell ads on mine. I mean, even now going out to companies and offering Mr. Halfdome to use your product in a testimonial, and I've got a couple that pay me to do that. So I set up my tripod or bring my wife, and I film an ad for this outdoor product that they have, and they pay. So you got to be persistent, and you know, think about a blog is a great way to get into it. And it's, you got to take your time. It's going to take a while, but if you're passionate about it, you do it for fun. I mean, I give a lot of talks for free, and I just enjoy talking about it. You know, it's my passion. I want to share that with people.
Rick, unfortunately, our time is gone. But we want to thank you and for your talk tonight that someday never comes. And, Rick, will you be available afterwards? You have books for sale?
Yes, absolutely. I do have my Half Dome book, and I'll be glad to outside be the last one to leave here.
If people pick one up, you'll sign it for
absolutely.
Them?
Absolutely. Yeah, if you get a book, just come on up here, and I'll stand here. And you know, in 10 years, that book's going to be worth half of what it's paid for. Right. No, it's a good book. I like it. I go, hey, I wrote that. That's pretty good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Thank you. We also want to thank our audience, as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 110th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.